We have someone who will lead us and open us with a prayer right now.
Thank you.
Please repeat each line after me. Now talking God.
Now talking God.
With your feet I walk.
With your feet I walk.
I walk with your limbs.
I walk with your limbs.
I carry forth your body.
I carry forth your body.
For me, your mind thinks.
For me, your mind thinks.
Your voice speaks for me.
Your voice speaks for me.
Beauty is before me.
Beauty is before me.
And beauty is behind me.
And beauty is behind me.
Above and below me hovers the beautiful.
Above and below me hovers the beautiful.
I am surrounded by it.
I am surrounded by it.
I am immersed in it.
I am immersed in it.
In my youth, I am aware of it.
In my youth, I am aware of it.
And in old age, I shall walk quietly the beautiful trail.
I shall walk quietly the beautiful trail.
Amen.
Our first presenter for this afternoon is Sister Jose Habde. She is a part-time faculty member and teaches courses in Native American spirituality at the Institute in Culture and Creation Spirituality at Holy Names College in Oakland, California. She's of Seneca Iroquois. I wanted to say Iroquois first, that's why. descent, and she has degrees and studies in a variety of subjects such as American literature, theology, psychology, communication arts, Native American law, architecture, and engineering. And all that comes full circle so that she's fully versed about issues of creation. I present to you Sister Jose Habde.
There are, as usual, in Christian gatherings, seats up front. So unless you're saving a seat for somebody, which is also very Christian, to come in and collect about six for yourself, and then wait for your friends to come and fill them up, huh? Then just kind of clear those a little bit, and then we'll leave the seats in the back. Now, our general topic today is creation, and we're going to present it from three different perspectives. My general theme, as was given to me, is creation as the connector. And that is very Native American, that is profoundly gospel, that is deeply Old Testament, and that is other world religions, if we can acquaint ourselves with all of that. So first, I'm standing here in a shawl, because almost every tradition has something that suggests celebration. And the shawl for many tribes in this country and for many tribes in India, I've discovered, and in Pakistan and in Arabia and other places, is the shawl for a woman. And we're essentially women. I would like to welcome the minority here, the men. It's always good if you can join us and get your minds opened and fertile and everything by being with us. Anyway, that's not a put-down, but because we've always enjoyed being influenced by you all. But I just wear the shawl. It really belongs to Wilma Lawrence, who is one of my native friends here. It was a naming gift to her. And so I'll just give you a little movement with it. When I was over in Hawaii and down in the South Pacific, the women wore grass skirts. And that took them out to the ocean for movement. This takes you to the grasses of the land for movement, see? So what we're doing always is never just doing something without connecting it spiritually. So that's, and you know, I am kind of just playing a little here while people who are Native American are coming. In the Native traditions that I know of, in all of our original languages, there are three words we do not have. work, because that's a separation, divisive, structured word that separates you from celebration. Late, you can never be late if you're a native. You just miss the meeting, but you're never late. And don't close my doors and lock them. That's not native either. So if whoever's in charge back there, I don't care if people come in a little later, they're never late. It just means they just missed a little of the meeting. But that's a judgment word. And the other word that we don't have is any word for time, because that's this kind of a word, and we think in great circles. Okay, does that kind of get us ready a little bit? All right, so this is the swing. See, and you can swing with me now. I'll give you a beat. And what you start doing is tapping your feet, giving your shoulders a little movement. You don't have to stand up to do this. I'll give you another stand up in a minute, but ready? Ho, ho. I am a realist. I know it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And that you just ate. And you got to bed late. And some of you even got up early. And you're a little tired. So I keep giving you breaks. I'll teach you how to stretch native in this too. But creation is much bigger than native. But if you're truly connected with creation, you are native. See, because native really means natural, that you can flow with it and move with it. And we want to be able to do that. And in many Christian traditions, we're not very natural. We're very European, tied down, stiff-legged, stiff-minded, stiff-bodied. See, so, and women, we've got a natural image in creation from our bodies that we are not to be straight and proper. We're to be curvy and rounded like the earth is, like the universe is, like the sense of the moon is and the sun is. Isn't that true? So we walk with a body that teaches us roundness all the time. And unless we've really gone with society, with the falseness of society, I don't mean good health, but I mean, you know, stick images. Women who insist on looking like sticks do violate themselves somewhere. Because I've never seen breasts yet that don't get some kind of a round shape starting. And I've never seen hips that, if you give them a chance, won't go just a little into swing, you know. And so with creation, we want to connect with our mother, the earth, and our father, the sky, and our brother, the sun, and our sister, the moon, and our brother, the water, and our brother, the fire, and our sister, the water, because we want to be relational if we're creational. And if we get relational, then it hits our mind, and our imagination becomes very creative. And then it hits our body, and we find body movements that are creative through dance, or through liturgical movement, or just through a nice movement. When I entered the convent, I'm a Franciscan, and my mother was full-blood Seneca, dad was Seminole, but I grew up with the Navajos, the Utes, and the Apaches in the Southwest Desert, so I got the best of all the worlds. Matriarchal, patriarchal, the whole ball game, see? But the thing is, you have to learn how to relate. I came out of the Southwest. Lots of space. That's a creation relation. If you grew up in spacey places, you're going to relate to all of life differently than if you live a cramped, teeny, weensy, itsy, bitsy, stay-home style. So in the convent, you know, I walk like I came from the West. I was a rodeo rider. I grew up on horses. I was raised with 9 brothers. I didn't live very straight-laced, see? So they'd tell me in the convent, now, you swing your arms an awfully lot. In fact, you swing yourself an awfully lot. And I would say, I can't help it. I grew up with space. If there's space, you move. See? So what I'm saying is, in when we talk creation spirituality or creation connectedness, it all connects. And that's what you want to be about all the time. Loving your body, connecting your shape with your sexuality, connecting your sexuality with your fertility, connecting your fertility with your availability to the Holy Spirit to come upon you and work within you and move within you And life is what happens. So whether you procreate physically, or you procreate spiritually, or you procreate mentally, it all has to keep connecting. Now, Anne's going to do a wonderful thing. She's a real scholar, see, and Elizabeth, of course, is too, but Anne's a real scholar. She's going to take Genesis about two lines and develop it. Isn't that wonderful? Okay. And because I know she's going to be working with Genesis as creation story, I'm going to tell you a Native American creation story. And the reason I'm doing this is because you won't be as creative as you can be if you don't look at the way other spiritual traditions are creative. You can't sit in your little cubby hole with a 2,000-year history. You can't. And then if you don't know any more of your history than that, then you miss your whole Old Testament to boot, right? And then you will never know what Sophia means if you don't understand how wisdom pulsates through every real spiritual tradition. But I'd like to tell you that in all the native traditions I know, now I come from the Seneca, and one of our main creation stories is that the name of this country, the United States of America, before people got lost on it, like Columbus and other people came around, before we had to find them wandering around, we already had a name for this land, and it was called Great Turtle Island. Isn't that a name? And when I tell children that, they say, oh, that's a much nicer name. But then I say, thank God we didn't get Vespucci. The United States of Vespucci, that would have been something else to deal with. So you have to keep connecting. But in most creation stories that I've met in many different traditions, native or otherwise, there are always certain characteristics. The Creator makes us out of something. The Creator makes us out of something. There's usually a tree of life involved. There's some place that's supposed to be exceptionally beautiful and lovely. Isn't that true? Like what the Garden of Eden or paradise or whatever it is. Some place that's very, very lovely. And that people, two-leggeds, are always the last to be created. You know, and many Christians interpret that. That's because we're the crown of creation. Many natives interpret it because the Creator is always hesitant, reluctant to make the two-leggeds, because if they are first, they'd mess it up before the Creator got started. So you make them wait till last because they tend to be the messers up of all of creation. And that's true generally, that the swimmies, the crawlies, the wingeds, the four-leggeds, all of these creatures are here first to greet the two-leggeds. Now, most native peoples also believe that the most beautiful place on earth is where you come from. Isn't that lovely? So there is no Eden over across the sea that natives never heard of. That doesn't exist for them. The most beautiful place is here, where we are. Our mom, our land, our mother earth, our dad sky, and how the clouds and everything form here. That's the most beautiful place, see? So I'm going to give you a creation story that I just love since I came in from California. This is a California creation story from the Modoc tribe. And when I first heard it, I was just delighted in it. Now here it is, and then you can connect it with what Anne says later, you know. But the Creator is out wandering the universe, seeing how creation looks. And the Creator always looks for beauty because the Creator is a decorator, a lover of loveliness. That's why women and men are so beautiful, because the Creator loves loveliness. But the Creator is a decorator, celebrates too many flowers, too much color, overabundance, overgrowth, jungles, all of this. That's what the Creator likes, see? So the Creator's out looking around and everything looks so darn good that the Creator says, I guess I'm going to have to buckle down now and make the people. So the Creator goes to the most beautiful place on earth, and this is a California tribe, which is Northern California, of course. Now see, your Creator would, if you were a different tribe, would come to wherever you're from. And the Creator comes, and guess who's waiting for Creator? Coyote. And Coyote says, oh ho, nothing else to do, huh? You're going to have to reluctantly make the people. And the Creator says, yes. And Coyote says, what you going to make them out of? Now, see, the Creator doesn't say, I think I'll take a little dust and a little water and make it from slime. Not in this story. The Creator says, I'm looking. So the Creator wanders along and finds this gorgeous tree very tall and very green, has not only blossoms but fruit. And the Creator says, that's good for people. They need to reach high to find another world. And then the Creator looks down at the tree and says, oh, wonderful, deep roots. They can go seeking in what looks dry and find water. That's good for the people, deep roots and a tall reach and a lot of greenery and beauty. So then the Creator explores the bark and says, now this is beautiful because it's many colored bark. There should be many colored people because it's, God bless you, because it's much more beautiful if there are many colors and they can teach each other different ways of doing things. And then the Creator takes two little pieces of the bark off and tests it for what's flexible, how flexible. If you can't be flexible, you can't be a people. And then the Creator says, how tough, if you can't be strong, you can't be a people. So this seemed to pass the test. So the Creator says to Coyote, I've got it. I'm going to make the people out of the bark of this tree. So the Creator takes two strips of bark. And the Creator goes over and plants one strip on one side, one strip on the other side, and on this beautiful white sand with the ocean glistening out there, the Creator lies down between the two strips of bark and goes to sleep to dream up the people. Most little girls that I know prefer this to having a man deformed for life because he lost a rib. But anyway, the Creator goes to sleep, and pretty soon the Creator wakes up, and here are the people. Man and woman are created, one on each side, but they're both still asleep. So the Creator gets up and goes over and stands behind a tree to watch, to see who wakes up first. And Coyote says, I'm betting on woman. I'll bet you woman will wake up first of the two of them. And the Creator says, I never bet on my own creatures, Coyote. But sure enough, woman wakes up first, and she looks around at this wonderful world and across at this wonderful creature, and she knows about man. She's already gifted with wisdom, see? So, but man is still asleep. So woman's very first act after creation is contemplating how to wake up man. The woman sits there and she's contemplating, and finally the Spirit touches her imagination and she knows how to wake up man, and she reaches across and tickles man, and man wakes up laughing. Now I think that's a wonderful creation story, and look how it calls you to re-image. How do you want to relate your life to men and women? Poking around with a guilt trip? Or would you like to discover the power of tickling each other to life, into laughter, into freedom, into delight, and therefore handing yourself over to all of creation with a marvelous delight and joy? So, do you see how this kind of creation story breaks you open a little differently? And it's very contemporary. You'd be surprised when I tell this story to young women how much better they like it, see? And then it's a story, because all of creation and connecting with creation is the power to tell the story, to tell it to yourself, to tell it to each other, to pass it on to your kids, called tradition or whatever, see? You have to keep telling the story and bringing it to life. And somebody said, yeah, but what if I don't have a spiritual background? What if I don't know the book of Genesis, and I'm not Native American, and I don't know these creation stories? What am I supposed to do? Well, then you have to become contemporarily creative and bring woman to life. And this may not sound very spiritual, but I'm going to use it anyway. This is a fable by Thurber. Do you know the story of Little Red Riding Hood? You know that story, the big bad wolf and all this. Okay, and how the wolf goes ahead and gets into grandma's clothes and all that. Okay, well now this is a contemporary fable, and these are the connections you have to make. You always be having to listen to how young women hear things, as well as middle-aged women, elder women, ancient women, and men. How do the young'uns hear it, see? Well, in this story, Little Red Riding Hood is tripping along through the woods, you know, and she meets the wolf. She's got a little basket of goodies on her arm because her grandma's sick. She meets the wolf, and he says, where are you going, Little Red Riding Hood? She says, I'm on my way to visit my grandma. She's been sick, and my mama made her some goodies. And he said, and just where does your grandmother live? She says, oh, she lives over on the other side of the woods over there. And he said, well, I hope she gets better. And of course, Little Red Riding Hood goes on the usual path, and the wolf runs around to the little cottage and gets in and gets Grandma and has her for his main meal, jumps in her clothes, you know, nighty and everything, and jumps in bed. Pretty soon, Little Red Riding Hood comes along, and so she knocks at the door, knock, 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 and the wolf said, who's there? And Little Red Riding Hood says, it's I, Grandma, Little Red Riding Hood. And the wolf says, come in, my dear. So Little Red Riding Hood opens the door. She takes one look at the wolf in her grandmother's clothes. She reaches into the little lunch basket, pulls out a six-shooter, and shoots the wolf dead. And the moral of this story is you do not fool little girls today the way you used to. Stand up and stretch a minute, and I'm going to teach you how to stretch native. Now, when you stretch and you're tired, is it more natural, as long as you have permission, you have to be courteous, to make a little noise or not?
Yes.
Grunt and groan a little bit. That's native. Oh, oh, oh. Even your body's happier. Sit down. No, no, while you're up, I'll teach you a dance step. Okay, while you're up, I'll teach you just a basic dance step. You can't bring a drum all the way across the country for a half an hour. But the way you dance if you're native is you learn to step into your mother, who is the earth. Now, don't step white. Step native. That means bend your knees. Bend your knees like you're stepping, not like you're walking on water as if you're Jesus Christ in the female form or something. See? So step into your mother, the earth, and roll into your father, the sky. So when you step down, give your shoulders a roll. Do you see how you get a circle? And you go in two circles. You meet the earth and you meet the sky. Isn't that beautiful? Okay, now I'll give you the drum beat, and you just do it, and I'll do it along with you, and then I'll give you a little chant. Okay, ready? See, step into your mom, the earth. Roll into your dad, the sky. Step into your mom, the earth. Hey, 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 hey. And if your voice is saying, I wish I could do something, wish I could yell out, do it, okay? Hey, 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 hey. And then what if you have a dog or a cat or an animal that you just love, and they're out there, they're part of creation, and they say, I wish I could dance with you, I wish I could come in too. Then you invite them in, so then you go, yip, yip, bye. Well, you know, all of us in trying to speak for half an hour, you know that this has got to be kind of short-circuited here and there. But what I'm trying to suggest is, if you can connect with all of creation, imagination, your body, the body of humanity, the body of Christ that's all around you, the body of your ancestors who have gone before you, the body of the children who have not yet been born. If you can connect with all of that, you will connect with the mystical potentials of creation. Because creation, and you know that yourself, we are called to ecstasy just through the world of creation. If you truly love beauty, if you truly love fragrance, if you truly love the harmony of the body or the harmony of sound, you are a candidate for mystical experience. And if you are a candidate for mystical experience, you will discover that through experiences of ecstasy. You will be brought to the edge of beauty. You will be brought to the edge of harmony. You will be brought to the edge of awe, of amazement, of delight, of silence, of reverence, of respect. See, and it might be a violin or a voice that brings you to the edge. Have you ever listened to something musical and you're coming along and you don't know if that person's going to get that high C or if that violinist is going to go crash on that note or if it's going to be sweet and go over the mountaintop? And you become the instrument and the voice through your own yearning and your own concern. And when that person goes over, you go over. You have already sung or played into that kind of power. And you can get this experience when you watch a beautiful basketball game or football game. You see the body's impossible capability of turning absolutely liquid in the air. the beauty and the harmony and the marvelousness of the body to be carried by imagination, by skill, by knowledge, by health beyond itself, and you become that beautiful ballet movement, or that beautiful basketball player, or that beautiful kick that that soccer player does. You couldn't believe possible. My mother said, ecstasy is easy when you're nursing a baby. Women have told me ecstasy is understandable when you're having a child. And you get the characteristics. Ecstasy usually means it's so sweet you can hardly stand it, and it's so painful you can hardly stand it. And if you don't have both, if you don't get that tension, then your creative instincts either think you should go through life without pain, which is totally unrealistic, or you should go through life without joy, which is worse. You know, if you have to lose one or the other, lose pain for a while. Pain will always catch up with you, but joy may never return. See, if you lose joy, then joy will say, I'm not going there anymore. There's no fun in that house. That's an old dead cell. Nothing's happening. Nobody's shedding anything every spring. Nobody's rolling with the knowledge of new life and blossoming into fullness and ripeness into harvest and austerity into winter to get ready for a fullness of spring again. If you can't go through that spiritually and psychically, then you'll be scared to death of it physically. As you get older, like I'm getting older, a little older, as you get older, you will discover your hair lets you down a little bit. There's a German theologian and philosopher who said the age of 30 is the beginning of decay. Isn't that a great line for American society? Scared to death. And I love it. You know, I think it's the most stupid thing in the world, but I love it that the press insists on and ferreting out everybody's age in this country. Oh, God, you know, Zsa Zsa and all those people, they're always putting down 4 or 5 years, you know, but somebody will catch them up. No, she's 5 years older than she says she is, or whatever, you know. But he says the age of decay comes upon us when we become mature enough to recognize that we are mortal and that we will die. And your first signs are with the suggestion of a wrinkle. Now, you can go out and buy creams until you're broke. But anybody that's got good eyesight will pick out your patterns, kid. And you can start pulling out that first gray hair, the second gray hair, the third gray hair. But at a certain point, you have to discover, if I keep pulling out these gray hairs, I'm set up for baldness. And then, you know, if you want to look gracious and you want to do this, and women who have to keep their jobs have to do more of this than men do because we have a biased society on this, then you might have to say, I must tint this a little bit. And so then you discover Clairol. Now, Clairol can be a gift if you don't think the fountain of eternal life is in Clairol. You know, somebody said to me, Jose, you'd look younger if you dye your hair. I said, but I don't want to look younger. I don't want to wake up on my deathbed and have everybody saying, my God, she's gray. I thought you were blackheaded all this time. So I said, I'd rather roll with the reality, because in our creation spirituality with Native Americans, to become gray is to become wise. To become older is to have learned something. And if you have it, we'll put up with you anyway. We'll still put up with you, you stupid thing. You had 70 years to grow in wisdom and you never caught on. Now you deserve our compassion. So in my call to you for creation to be a connector, connect everything spiritual with everything that delights and excites you. If you love the word and the scripture delights and excites you, the capital W, let that become your poetic expression. And if you love just listening to ordinary people talk, how y'all doing down there? You know, you want to connect that then. And if somebody says, you's a guys, well, you know, there's life in all of this. There's creativity in all this. So if the word does it, then let poetry lead you. Then let the story lead you. Then let overheard conversations lead you. Let's see, you got 4 minutes. Okay, there's nothing more exciting. Are you coming up to stop me?
No.
No. Because if you are, you little native, you started me late, and I'm taking my time.
We natives know how long it takes, 4 minutes a day.
And I'm a better native than most because I learned to live in two worlds. So I learned to go by this clock thing. But, you know, whatever will help you connect, if, like, one of my best connectors is sitting on a bus or sitting on a plane and listening to the conversation. Now, I don't eavesdrop, but if people don't have any more sense than to talk so loud, they need to be overheard and judged, too. And commented on. Sometimes I sit in front of somebody who's talking as if he's deaf, he's about 6 inches from her, and she's deaf, she's 6 inches from him, and all the rest of us are deaf, we're four rows up, and then they'll tell a little story, and of course you can't help but over here, you either have to put on your earphones or delight in it, learn to be creative. So then one person will make a dumb statement like, how do you think she ever got to that? And then I'll turn around and answer him. Helps people develop space manners for enclosed spaces, see? Just intrude on their own conversations a little bit. But anyway, this is what I'm calling you to. Whether it's in your dreams that you wake up and reflect on your dreams, or whether it is being true to your own tradition and story, but being open to hearing other people just because you might get some insights and inspirations, whatever that is, allow that to happen, and you will move into the world of connective creativity. And I'm going to end with a secular quote and then show you a native prayer to connect you with the day. The quote is just from a novel, a love novel, Howard's End. And some of you may have seen the movie. You know it's all about people who never connect. It's missing all your life, missing each other. And they're going to get married at this particular passage, page 87 in the original paperback. I read it on the campus of Notre Dame, and it was so good, I stopped and memorized it. See, you got to make these connections. Anyway, she was thinking about how he was going to have to change when they got married. Gee, this wasn't right, and that wasn't right. And once they got married, shape it up. You know, women are the most stupid, unwisdom things in the world that we keep thinking we're going to change men. We keep thinking we're going to marry people and change them. How stupid can we get? You know, if you don't like them the way they are, go fish somewhere else, but don't keep trying to convert everybody all the time. Well, anyway, she's thinking about this, and suddenly she gets a great inspiration. And the inspiration is she's preaching to the wrong person. She should be preaching to herself about what needs to be changed, not to this guy she's going to marry. And this is the essence of her inspiration, and I love it. It's this. Stop living in fragments. Only connect. Only connect the prose of your everyday living with the poetry of your highest ideals. Only connect everything in you that can be beastie with everything in you that is holy. And you will live your life at a new height. Stop living in fragments. Only connect. And then this is a way to greet the morning prayer that is Native American to many tribes. It's called the three-step prayer, and I'll show you what it is. We don't have time to do all these things together because we'd need a couple hours. I'll show you how it looks. You go outside, you do this outside. So if the weather's bad, it'll be a very short morning greeting. And if the weather's good, it can be longer and more extended. You go outside and stand still to center yourself, and then you take three steps into the day, and it looks like this. This is centering. First step, look around. What kind of a world have we got today? What kind of a gift have we got? You don't like the weather? Tough. You're not going to change it anyway. You might as well learn to embrace it, huh? Change your inside weather. Second step, step into yourself. You don't have to move here. Where you've been, where you're going, where you are now, who you will meet today. Walk into who you are. That's one way that you connect. And the third step is walk into the mystery of the unknown. Because you don't know if you'll be dead or alive tonight. So walk into the truth of possible reality. And if you go outside and you take the day the way it is and embrace it, you get a grateful heart for whatever happens. And you are much freer than people who are mad all day long because it snowed. I came out here without a pair of boots. Shoot, if I can't stand a few minutes outside without a pair of boots, you think I want to be burdened for 4 days out here with a ton of clothes that I don't need as soon as I get on a plane. I'm too creative for that. My mother called it laziness. My mother said, Joe, you will always be very creative because you are essentially lazy. And she's right. And it's a great gift. It's called leisure. Okay, so then walk into yourself and accept that and embrace it. It'll be painful and beautiful, but just don't bruise and break other people as you walk through the day. They'll make room for you to pass, but don't pass so quickly or so discourteously that you break them and bruise them on the way. And then walk into the mystery of the unknown and the spirit of your life, the God who is your creator, moment by moment as well as eternally, will give you the power and the strength of beauty. Thank you.
One of the fun things when we go into the tribal groups of the Northwest is they teach us how to bring that laugh from deep within, and I think you've done that for us. So as another way of being able to honor her in that way that she brings joy and it causes us to think and take those gifts and skills that we have from within, let's give her a wonderful deep laugh. Just bring it up. Oh, come on, come on. That's a compliment of the highest degree that you can get when you visit some of our tribal groups from the Northwest. Thank you, Sister Havdi.